Where do we start? Maybe we got a letter from Bo. It's addressed to Srivasti Abbey. Okay? So it's this beautiful card. This is taken. They have this huge, enormous tanka that every year they unfold at, it's the Panchen Lama's monastery. I can't remember. Tashi Limpo in Tibet. And so that's a picture of it. And then there were small notes to me, which I'll read to you. And then to Miles and Aida, which I haven't read. But, so I'll read you what Bo wrote, and then I'll pass it around, and, you know. Okay? Because my last letter to him, you know, after we got those letters, and he was kind of freaked. And he's really putting in words what a lot of you people are feeling, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? So I wrote him. And I just said, you know, there's been a really big misunderstanding, and please call, you know, because I want to sort this out. And then I just wrote a little bit more, you know, but basically what the misunderstanding was first of all, on my side, because he wrote so much about his attachments, and he didn't write at that point about all the other things he wants to do, so we got kind of a lopsided view. And the attachments were expressed pretty intensely, too, which I'm sure he felt. But then also from his side, I think he fell into something that is extremely common here in the West, which is doing those things is wrong, and I should not do them if I'm going to be a Buddhist, you know, because if I'm going to be a Buddhist, I'm got to be a good Buddhist and believe in everything and do everything perfect. I should have been a Buddha, at least by yesterday. And, you know, and we put this on ourselves. I mean, I kind of put it in a very gross way, but, you know, there's that expectation often upon ourselves. And then, of course, you know, we're full of ignorance, attachment, and anger, and pride, and jealousy, and self-centeredness, and the whole thing. And so, you know, then we get really down on ourselves, and what a lousy practitioner we are, we can't do it right, and Buddhism expects us to, like, drop all these things, but then our life is going to be totally miserable if we do, because after all, those things do bring us happiness, but they don't really bring us happiness, but somehow I still get a lot of happiness out of them, and I don't really want to give them up. And why are you telling me how to live my life and that, you know, I got to give these up? And so we completely misinterpret the whole thing, okay? Because the Buddha isn't commanding us to do anything. First of all, there's no Buddhist catechism that we have to, you know, put our hand on the Bible and swear to in order to be a Buddhist. The whole idea is what helps you, you take and integrate in your life and you practice. You know, what doesn't help you, you leave on the back burner for the time being, okay? There's no pressure to accept some kind of catechism or doctrine in order to be a quote-unquote good Buddhist. And second of all, the Buddha isn't telling us, thou shalt not do, you know, thou shalt not go skiing, thou shalt not do, you know. Did you turn him on to skiing now?
No, I was to her. I heard her skiing in my life.
Okay.
He hates the outdoors.
You know, the Buddha's not saying thou shalt not do all these things. What he's saying is, you know, observe your mind. And that whole discussion we had about what really is happiness and what are the different kinds of happiness. And what's happiness that comes from the senses? And does that last long? And does that really satisfy you? And does it bring other problems or not? And what's the happiness that comes through internal spiritual transformation? Does that last long? Does that bring genuine satisfaction? And then, You know, Buddha just said, check up your own experience, and then you choose and decide for yourself, you know, what kind of happiness that you want. And if you decide that you want some of the spiritual happiness, I mean, look, the Buddha was at the same place we were. He was an ordinary sentient being exactly like us. You know, once upon a time, the only difference was he practiced and we didn't. So it's not like the Buddha started out as a Buddha and is always a Buddha and doesn't understand our situation. No, I mean, he lived in samsara, cyclic existence, just like us. He understands completely what it's like, you know. And so he's just kind of giving advice. Well, if you, you know, decide that you want to go for the spiritual kind of happiness, here are the kind of antidotes that you want to use to, you know, to suppress, or not suppress in a psychological way, but to subdue the afflictive emotions, the disturbing emotions in your mind, so that you can really have true happiness. And then he just left it up to us to choose to practice or not practice. You know, he didn't command us, you know, and say it's wrong if you don't do this and you're bad if you do that. And no, you know, there's not this judgment. It's completely up to us, okay, whether we, you know, what we do with the teachings or don't do with the teachings. So, you know, because we come from a Christian culture, we often impose this thou shalt not on Buddhism. We impose your, you know, I'm wrong and I'm evil and sinful if I do this. You know, we impose I'm not being a good, you know, Buddhist. And a lot of these things come from our religious upbringing. And then we just superimpose them on the Dharma, but that's not what the Buddha was talking about at all. You know, and the Buddha doesn't reward and punish us. Okay? So, you know, these things are quite important to understand. So I think that was part of the misunderstanding. So I wrote him a letter and just said, you know, there's been a big misunderstanding, because he seemed to be in, you know, we've all been in that mental civil war state, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we know that it's not fun. So, So then this was his response to it. I don't know if either of you responded to the letters that he wrote. You did? Okay. I don't know if he got that or not yet. But. So he wrote, and I'll pass this around. To all of you who have participated in the Vajrasattva retreat, I would like to say thank you, congratulations, and good luck. Thank you for allowing me to participate, in spirit at least, in the retreat with my letters. Each morning I have said silent prayers for all of you and have perceived a cosmic connection being made. Isn't that right? Also, congratulations. Y'all have no doubt been put through the ringer. I can't even imagine what it's like sitting in meditation for 8 hours a day. Heck, to me a single hour is a long time. So permit me to express my awe at what y'all have accomplished. You definitely get props, credit, from me. Okay? Lastly, let me wish you all good luck in the future. Wherever you go and whatever you do, the best of luck always. Just remember that most of our, quote-quote, luck is a manifestation of the choices and consequences that we make every day. May we all choose, decide wisely. Peace to you all, both. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Nice, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I actually wasn't sure how he would feel about being included in the group, because he's, you know, hesitant to call himself a Buddhist and, you know, like that. So did anybody tell him that you put a cushion for him? You told him. Okay. And then the letter he wrote to me, he said, thank you for your last letter. I will respond to it soon. I have several things to touch on and it might be quite long. The phone doesn't necessarily work well for me, but I will try to get your number added to my list. After I last wrote you and Miles and Aida, I decided that I need some time to not think about all my problems and defects. That was why. Sometimes we just need to, you know. No, let our mind relax a bit. I am currently working on two different projects that have been put off for a while, and I may or may not finish them by the time you take your trip. So if you don't hear from me until you get back, don't trip out or anything. I just need time to get some other things done. Hope the retreat went well for everyone. It was sort of an honor to be allowed to participate at the periphery of it. Any contributions that I may have made were totally by accident. Anyway, that's it for now. I will write you again in the next week or two. Until then, y'all take care. Peace, folks. Okay, so I'll leave all this out and you can... a number of people in the interviews have asked about how to practice after the retreat. Okay, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about that and a little bit about coming out of retreat. Like I said last time, it may feel like your mind is still bouncing around, just not as much as last time, you know, when you started. But actually, you'd be surprised at how much quieter your mind is, and it's very sensitive, and you'll find noise and music and movies and, you know, all this kind of stuff, especially after being here, just like really an assault on your senses. So that's why, you know, go into things very, very slowly. Some of you have to travel. There's not much choice. Like I said, there's the tendency to want to talk all the time, but you'll find it really exhausting. So, you know, we'll just talk a little bit and then, you know, we'll just have silence. And if you get exhausted, just say, I'm talked out. And, you know, we'll all understand here. And when you go home, you might inform the people that you're living with of the same thing. There's also a tendency at the end of the retreat like this to go home and whoever you're close with, just you want to tell them everything about the retreat, every single meditation session, you know, every single thought, every single everything, you know. Don't do it. They're not in the same space as you are. Okay? Say a little bit, then leave it. And if they ask questions, you can say more. But they've been going to work and been watching the 6 o'clock news and going to the shopping center and doing all these three things for the past 3 months. And and also they might want a little bit of talk time too. Yeah. And so don't feel like you have to tell somebody, you know, your dear best friend, everything that went on. Because sometimes when you do that, that depletes the power of the experience for you. It lessens the power of your retreat experience for you because it's just become something that you blah, blah, talk about. Yeah? And you blah, blah to this one, you blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly all the feeling you had in here is just the same words that you say to everybody, and it becomes kind of conceptual and dry. Yeah? So there is that tendency, but try and refrain yourself because it does take your energy, and sometimes, you know, your friends aren't, they don't want to know all of it. Yeah? And like I said, so there's that. And, you know, same with, like, going out and meeting all your friends. Initially, you know, all the people that you spent sessions daydreaming about, there's this tendency, I'm going to go home and call them all up because I want to talk about all of them. I miss them. You know, go slowly. Go really slowly because if you jump in there and they're going to be telling you, you know, their crisis about this and their trauma about that and the latest movie and the TV show and what the dog's done and you know, you're going to find it a little bit overwhelming after having been fairly quiet for 3 months. Okay, so, you know, contact people slowly limit it and make sure that you give yourself enough time just to sit quietly and meditate. Okay? And, you know, you've spent 3 months developing a fantastic friendship with Vajrasattva. I mean, 3 months on vacation with a Buddha, that's pretty nice. You don't want to go home and drop it to be with your honey, okay? Because, okay, you brought your honey here and you dreamed about him or her, you know, half the sessions. There's the tendency, well, buy Vajrasattva. I'm going back to my honey. Don't do that to yourself, because you have this wonderful relationship with this Buddha now, and so keep it up every day. I mean, Vajrasattva is your best friend. So continue to do the practice on a daily basis. Often they say it's best to do Vajrasattva in the evening, because then we can review the day's activities and purify them. So that's what's recommended. But if, you know, you feel more comfortable doing it in the morning, that's fine too, no problem. What I usually recommend is in the morning, you know, to do the meditation on the Buddha and the prayers that we usually do, and then do some, you know, do a little bit of breathing meditation to quiet your mind back, and then do some of the analytic Lamrim meditations. You know, it's very important to do Lamrim, because it's the through the Lamrim that our attitude and our perspective really begins to change. And so that helps you also in the morning to generate a good motivation, okay? Because when you do Lamrim, you pick one of the topics, and you can follow the Lamrim CDs if you want to and cycle through those, or you can take a Lamrim book and follow the meditations as they're outlined in a Lamrim book, okay? The outlines I made are just, you know, to get you going. They're actually meant that you should study and read Lamrim and fill in the spaces in those outlines with, you know, what you study. And always, or the teachings you've heard, you've all heard Lamrim and thought training teachings. And especially applying those teachings to your own life so that you really use them to help you with your life and to understand your life and to work with your minds and your different, you know, negative emotions or wrong conceptions that arise. So, you know, the Lamrim is really, really very important. Yeah. So if you do that, and, you know, like I said, begin it with the visualization and some prayers. Do that in the morning and set your motivation. And then the evening, do Vajrasattva. Yeah. And then, you know, you're also in the habit of doing 35 Buddhas and King of Prayers. If you want to do, you know, either one or both of those in the evening, go ahead. You know, everything that you did here, also your other morning practices and, you know, everything, take it home and do it. You know, do the blessing of the speech and the whole thing. It's not like you do it at retreat and as soon as you leave retreat, you don't do it anymore. And especially the food offering. I think it's very good to do the food offering before meals and after meals, you know. That's good to do. Even you go out to a restaurant with people, you can still, you know, do the reflections on your own. You said them every day for 3 months. I would think you're probably pretty close to having them memorized, you know, if you kind of wean yourself from the prayer sheet. And then, you know, you can do that even if you're with other people who aren't Buddhist. Let them talk and, you know, you can just sit there and do it in your mind. And in your own home, there you have control. And so, you know, you say to whoever you're living with, you know, I want to sit down and, you know, before and after we eat, just do some prayers and reflect on the, you know, on what we're about to do and use the opportunity to create merit by making offering. Yeah.
Do you recommend often the long prayers that we have been...
Yeah, if you have the time, do the long prayers. If you don't, do the short ones. But, You know, the long ones are nice, especially the reflections, aren't they? To think about it. Yeah. And, what can I say? Food. You know, the same things. You know, when you bathe, think that it's nectar and you're washing Vajrasattva. And when you go to bed, you know, put your head in Vajrasattva's lap and go to sleep peacefully. And, you know, so everything that you got used to doing here, take home and continue to do. Now, if any of you are interested in, you know, keep continuing to do the Nundro or preliminary practices, I think it's very good. Because those practices are all for creation of positive potential and purification. You know, Nance is like doing water bowls. And as long as you do one of the practices every single day, then you can start keeping count of them and do that. So I think prostrations is a good one to do next, especially, you know, because that one takes some physical energy and we're all getting older and closer to death. So it's good to do before we get so old that we can't do it. So you do that with the 35 Buddhas. There's, also the refuge practice, water bowls, the Dorje Kadro, another short one called Samaya Vajra. Mandala offerings, guru yoga. What I was thinking of for next year is, we'll have a Vajrasattva retreat, and you know, some of you may want to come back for 3 months. You've already done Vajrasattva, so maybe during that period you could do the guru yoga. Yeah, I mean, people can still sit in the meditation hall and, you know, most of them be doing Vajrasattva, and a few of them be doing the guru yoga or refuge or something like that. And some of you may also want to consider coming back next year and serving the retreat, because it creates, you know, tremendous positive potential to be able to serve a retreat. And so some of you may want to do that as well. Because it really, it's very good when retreatants serve, because you kind of know what the environment is, and so please keep that in mind. What else? Oh yes, in your home having an altar. I mean, I kind of assumed that all of you do that because you know people who are usually committed enough to come to do Vajrasattva retreat have an altar in your home, but I'll say this just in case you don't. You must! Thou shalt! Buddha said, no, I'm joking. but it's just a nice thing to have in your home, you know, because you walk by, you see the Buddha, he's so peaceful and calm, and the whole practice, you know, again, you've gotten into many good habits here. So don't break those habits and think, oh, well, the retreat is over, I don't have to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. You're used to getting up early. You're used to, you know, making offerings on the altar and setting up water and offering food and light and stuff like that. So just everything you did here, you know, just take it home and do it at home. Yeah? And it really makes a big difference if you start your day off like that. Now, and similarly, you're used to getting up early. You're used to doing it every single day. So while you have that habit going, you know, keep it going. Don't think, oh, retreat's over. Yeah, now I can sleep till 8 and I only have to do one session. No, you know, really try and meditate morning and evening. Really keep that energy that you've developed. You know, living in the unreal world is... You know, you won't have the same intensity in your practice as you do here in the real world. So don't expect to, you know that some of the feelings and things will subside. But you'll know that they're still possible because you've had them. Yeah? And so you know that potential is there, and you know that it's possible to build on that potential. Yeah, and so in your daily practice, you maintain that energy, You know, and by maintaining it, you're actually deepening it. You can further it. You might want to, you know, once a month do a weekend retreat or a one-day retreat, you know, where you just don't answer the phone and don't do email. What I want to start doing here at the Abbey is 4 days every month. No email, no phone. Residents do retreat. Okay? Yeah, so we got to start this. We're going to start it, yeah? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one thing that we have to meet, yeah? And go through and do our calendar and put these in, and then we do it, yeah? And then really, really keep to that. And then try also to go to teachings as much as you can and to do other retreats or courses or seminars. Stuff like that. It's very good every year. You know, depending on your work situation, if you could do at least 2 weeks of retreat, you know, if your work situation allows you to do a month, great. Or, you know, like I said, every year in the Abbey, we are closing in January, February, March, you know, or we might start December, January, February, I don't know, and just to retreat. Yeah, because it's really valuable. To be able to do that. What else? Any questions? Yeah.
I arrived home Sunday very late, mm-hmm. and the class in our Dharma group mm-hmm. is on Monday. And Monday and Tuesday. So I was thinking, jump there, but do you think it's a good idea, or maybe I wait for a week? Or
see how you feel. Yeah, just wait and see how you feel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might really want to go and mm-hmm. and see them and, you know, share a little bit of your experience, or you might feel, oh, I'll go one night, but not both, or you might feel, oh, yeah, going both nights. You know, or I won't go. Just see how you feel. People will understand. And if they don't, what to do? Well, one thing that you might know, I don't know if Louise and Kenna are thinking about coming, but I was thinking about it, and I think that it's here at the Abbey that it's better if couples don't do the retreat at the same time, that they come different years. Mm. Yeah? Because I think that allows people to have more mental space when they do the retreat. Yeah? Mm. So just to let them know in case they were planning on coming, to plan on separate years, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because it probably would have been a bit distracting having people's partners here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So I think better not. Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Mm-hmm. Only for clarification. You recommend us in the morning, set a good meditation,
mm-hmm.
and then do the Buddha meditation.
Yeah.
And then shamatha and analytics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If
I want to do the 35 Buddhas in the morning.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Before that.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine, yeah. Yeah, because you might want to do 35 Buddhas when you first wake up, because when you do it, it wakes you up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it makes it easier to sit. No problem. Okay? Yeah?
And tonight, you recommend you do that
by yourself. Yeah. But like I said, some people may find that, you know, maybe the Vajrasattva works better for them in the morning. So do it then, but, you know, still in the night, it's nice to look over the day.
And at night, one rosary,
one mala. Yeah, if you can do that, yeah, it's good, at least 21. If you can do a whole mala, it makes your practice stronger.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys can probably whiz through one mala by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. and, you know, met in the evening. You couldn't start your meditation session early, so that, like me, you know, I cannot meditate late in the evening. It's like, you know? So, and I think the way you guys changed it here, doing 35 Buddhas first in the evening, and then that's very good, you know? Because, so you see, you know, how if you're a morning person, if you're an evening person, you can adjust accordingly. You know, if you can't do your practice in the evening, then do it before dinner. So, you'll probably miss each other a lot. And go home and go, oh, I'm with this person. I spent 3 months wanting to be with them. And now I wish I were back at the Abbey. Friends at the Abbey, because they really understand me. And they understand I don't want to talk all the time. And they, you know, and they understand when I'm, you know, moody and what I'm going through. Yeah. And you just see how crazy the mind is, that we always want to be with who's ever not there. Yeah, just dissatisfied mind, isn't it?
And then I start reading. I want to go to Sarah again.
Oh, yes, Sarah.
Venerable, I'm thinking. Sometimes when I've gone on 9-day retreat, it didn't happen with the Chenrezig because, well, when I came back from Chenrezig 30-day retreat, I got sick. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the adjustment because I almost couldn't stand it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I almost couldn't stand the shift from the positivity and the silence to all the emails and phones and problems and I just got sick for like 3 or 4 days and went to bed. It's like with flu or something.
Yeah.
No, it was just like everything came on all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was that experience. But sometimes with the 9-day retreats, I've noticed I go home and I feel like I'm terrible. Like I'm worse than usual inside, you know, like reactive and very emotional. And I wondered if that's common, if you could talk about it.
Yeah.
What it's like ego going, I don't know what.
Well, I think the shift in the environment, just the shock on the nervous system of all of a sudden being with people who are asking questions and who want to talk about stuff. And sometimes you feel like just want to say, stop, leave me alone! You know? Because you've been used to having your own internal space, you know, and you've been building up your own confidence and your own ability to rely on yourself, your own ability to handle your own emotions. And then all of a sudden, there you are with you know, somebody, and it's just like, I just want to be alone. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just noticing instead of feeling like a bodhisattva towards them, I feel like the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, just like I don't want to hear, I can't stand it, I need to get away.
Yeah, and I think that comes partly because just the sensory overload of, you know, all the talking. And then the shift in the content of what you're talking about. Because it makes such a big difference when we talk about positive things than when we're just talking about problems. And it also makes a big difference because when we talk together, we talk about what's going on inside of ourselves, don't we? Mm-hmm. And then you go out on the outside and people are talking this and that, all these stupidagios, you know? It's like, stupid action. But, you know, these things, you just feel like, I enjoy the silence so much. I really don't want to hear about what your brother did, and I don't want to hear about your car, and I don't want to hear about your computer. I want to hear about, you know, the income tax.
President Bush.
And President Bush. Yeah. Because you're used to thinking about different things, and all of a sudden going back to talking about that seems totally uninteresting. Like, mm-hmm. You know, who wants to just put our energy into talking about that?
Mm-hmm. So what do we do? That's the problem.
What do you do? You tell who you're living with. You know, I'm probably not going to want to talk a lot. I'm going to need some time alone. I'm going to need some space. Yeah, so don't book your, and you know, that's the person you live with, and then outside of that, you know, don't have a dinner party 2 days after. Get back with all your friends, you know, because you're setting yourself up. Don't turn the television on. Don't listen to the news. Yeah. And just really regulate what you do. So I said there's a real tendency, you know, to, I got to jump in and, you know, do it all. But sometimes you just need, you know, one step at a time.
So I take from that, it would be a signal to myself if I'm starting to feel really that thing of, I need to...
If you need some space,
get space.
Go in your room and get some space.
Yeah.
Sit down and do another session. Because
yeah.
You've been having very rich food, and you're so used to meditating. You're not used to talking and having all that interaction. And so probably going from morning to evening without having some quiet time to meditate, you're going to go nuts. Mm-hmm. So really in the middle of the day, take some time out and, you know, go sit in your room quietly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see what I got stuck on was thinking, I've been meditating, so now I have space to help people and try to listen to everybody's everything and be real helpful.
Uh-huh.
And I just got really irritated.
Yep.
You know? And I was going, wow, I'm worse than I usually am instead of better.
And is that really helping?
No. I mean, one friend just totally replied to that. Like, boy, you're worse than me. And it really made me think. It was like, what is going on?
Well, it's also a good opportunity when we go back to look at the roles we put ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the self-image, I'm going to go back and help everybody by listening to their problems.
Yeah.
Why do I have that self-image that I am the person that everybody tells their problems to? You know, where's that self-image coming from? It's me who's created it. Do I want to continue to have it? You know, is that really the? Am I really helping people by doing that? Yeah. Or you know, it's a good chance to just notice, because we'll go back and like some of the old habits that we haven't even realized are habits. All of a sudden, you'll be back at home doing something, and you'll realize, oh my goodness, I do this a lot, and I didn't even notice it during retreat. Yeah, but it's only because you're back in the environment. And there I am, I've slipped into this role again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? You know, or some habitual thing, you know, maybe our thing is, you know, like you were talking about the glass half empty thing. Yeah? Oh, there I am, you know, I'm doing the glass half empty again. Or there I am, I'm complaining again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and you'll just see things that because you kept silent here, you may or may not have noticed, but when you go back and then all of a sudden you're talking and you're listening to yourself and like, why am I saying this? You know, you begin to see how you create a personality for yourself and then squish yourself into that personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either I'm the one who's the helper, or I'm the antisocial one, or I'm the, you know, real efficient one, or I'm the, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kind of watch and say, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it's like, somebody just get me out of the room with the computer. You know, lock the computer in a room and don't let me get to it. Okay? You know, unless it's, or, you know, the email, you know, turn off, get me, turn off the email, get me off the phone. If I'm writing a book, okay, but, you know, get me out of the email. I just cannot stand it, you know. But that's like my thing, you know. I've got to be really efficient and, you know, get all my business taken care of right away, and it never ends, and I go crazy. So, you know, so I know that's my thing. You know, so I need some discipline around this. So, you know, you may have your thing.
Seems surreal to kind of think about kind of changing. I mean, you know, it's kind of like we're just in a routine, and then thinking about that seems like this is so strange. You know?
Yeah. I remember when I did Bhadrasattva at Tushita in India, and I remember after the retreat walking down the hill to town, and it felt so surreal. I felt like I was in a dream. You know, it's like, what? This is so weird. You know, what are people doing? Look at what people think is important. I think that's one of the big shockers. It's like, you know, because you've just been dealing with, you know, with your own mind and seeing how your own mind creates happiness and suffering, you know, and stopping to put it all on what everybody else is doing. And then you go out there and it's like, they're all talking about this nonsense about sports and politics and, you know, and what this neighbor did and what that colleague at the job did and, you know, what they're going to plant in their garden and, you know, who's getting divorced and who's getting married and you know, what the kids are doing and you know, I want to go to Shivasti. And you'll take out the picture with all the emails in you and I'll just look at it. Oh. I was once there and I spent the whole time wanting to go home. I was so stupid. What is this satisfied mind doing to me? And then you'll want to call each other up and you'll just call and go, hello. And you just sit silently and you know the other person understands you.
Conference call and just do a session together where we're all just on the phone.
Yeah, right, right, yeah, like you do.
Great.